Jeff Levering and wife Ashley love their new patio door from Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
It's like having a brand new kitchen.
I love the roll screen. The fact that the screen is on the inside.
Get 0% interest for up to 48 months. Visit PellaWI.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Come join the conversation on the Old National Bank talk and text line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank. Get old. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show. So glad to have you with us. 1 o'clock this afternoon, 2 o'clock Eastern Time, the Federal Reserve is scheduled to announce whether they are going to once again hike the interest rate, the main interest rate. Right now it's around 5%. And keep in mind, it was under 1% not that long ago. This would be the 10th consecutive rate hike. A lot of people expect that they're going to lift it a quarter point to around 5.2%. And it'll be interesting to see what impact that has on the stock market. What's been going on, of course, is the Federal Reserve has been raising interest rates time after time after time in an effort to get control of inflation. The idea is if we make it so expensive that people can't afford to borrow money, well, then maybe they'll stop spending money. And if they stop spending money, then what we're going to see is maybe inflation will be tamed. I don't know if that's going to work. But this has a real world impact. I was talking to somebody last night, a younger person who was interested in buying a new home. She has a home, but she wants to move out of that neighborhood, move closer to where she works, kind of a starter home, and is looking at buying a new home. The problem with that is, you know, she purchased her home a number of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and she got this great interest rate, like an interest rate around like 2% or something like that. If she were to sell her house and then go to try to find another home, the, you know, interest rates that you'd probably getting on a 30-year mortgage, you know, 6-7%+. And she sits there and says, well, I really want to move up, but if you do the math, you know, for my budget, what I'd be finding is I'd be spending hundreds and hundreds of more dollars more per month that I don't necessarily have just for the pleasure of financing my home. And this is sort of the real world impact, because I know sometimes when we talk about interest rates going up, you know, people's eyes glaze over and why, what difference does this make? But it does make a huge difference if, again, in this particular case, you're looking to buy a big ticket item like a house. If you're in the market for financing for a car and you need financing, same sort of thing. So it's one of the reasons why this is very important, and we'll keep you updated. Like I say, the expectation is that the Federal Reserve is going to, because what they've done before really hasn't gotten a handle on inflation, they're going to continue doing the same thing. And the estimate is that they're going to raise the rates around from 5% to 5.25%. And that's the rate that they charge their best lenders. And then the lenders then pass that on to all the rest of us. So that's coming up in about an hour. We will keep you posted of what happens precisely. If you follow me on Twitter, it's at Jeff Wagner 620. Have a posting from yesterday. It is a follow-up to the story that we've been talking about all week. The situation that happened a couple days ago outside the middle school in Milwaukee, the Morse Middle School, I believe it was. And so what happens is it's 9 o'clock in the morning. If you haven't seen the video, there's a school bus that's parked on the side of the road. What happens is a car, a Kia, but we said on the air the other day, and it turns out to be correct, that it's stolen. It was stolen the night before from Milwaukee. It's being driven recklessly. It's swerving up and down the road. You can see this coming at a high rate of speed. There's kids hanging out the window of the car, various windows of the car. The car, at a high rate of speed, plows into the rear of the school bus. And one of the kids, a 15-year-old, who is hanging out the passenger side of the car, he gets ejected from the car. He is now in critical condition in the hospital. And I think the reports are that he's, you know, undergoing like brain surgery or things like that. There's an 11-year-old who's on the school bus, either just getting on the school bus or just getting off the school bus. He's knocked down. He's injured. The car, and it's really dramatic video, after it slams into the bus, its forward momentum continues on, and it hits a pickup truck that's a little bit further down the street. And somebody that's in the pickup truck is videoing this whole thing. So that's where we see it. So you have the one kid that's thrown out of the window of the car and is dragged behind the car. What happens is, as the car is moving after hitting the school bus and it's heading towards this pickup truck that it also hits, you see a number of people get out and start to run. And we've only had that video. Well, there's a new video that's out, and Fox 6 had it. And I've got a link to that on my Twitter account, again, at JeffWagner620. And it's a surveillance camera that's posted on a house that's halfway down the block from where this collision occurs. And what you can see in the video, and it's really very interesting, is you can see on this camera, you can see the four people they're all kids, four people who get out of the car and start running. And it's just this amazing thing, which demonstrates that, you know, there really are terrible people in this world. And I know that there's going to be some people who apologize, oh, for these kids. Oh, they're just kids. They don't understand their behavior. If you see this video, what it does, and this is how I described it on Twitter, it shows these four punks running like the cockroaches they are as they abandon their critically injured friend after crashing a stolen vehicle into a school bus. So you can now see them. And my point is, when they catch these losers, all four should be behind bars for years. But it's another example of, and I was saying this yesterday, you know who these kids are. I mean, they're now captured on video. People know who these kids are. People know who the kid that's now in the hospital in critical condition, they know who he was hanging out with. They know who his hangout gang is. And so you know that there's parents out there that know that their children were involved in this. You know that there's other kids who say, yeah, I recognize that so-and-so or that so-and-so. And yet here we are, you know, 3 days after the fact, and still, you know, you don't have people that are in custody as of yet, because I guess some people aren't willing to come forward and give the authorities the information they need. But there's no question. You can see who these are. There's four kids who were in the stolen car who are fleeing, leaving their fifth buddy behind, literally for dead. Now, he's in critical condition, you know, and he'll, you know, hopefully he will, in fact, survive. But they abandon him to flee and remain on the street at this point in time. Hopefully, by the end of this show, we'll get some good news that they have apprehended the four other people who were involved. And when they do, I think this community has a right to demand accountability. And I'm talking about more accountability than just, oh, let's slap them on the wrist, let's send them into juvenile detention, or let's put them back out on the street, return them to their parents who obviously weren't able to control them in the first place. No, there needs to be genuine accountability. And the more you see this, the more aggravating their behavior becomes. Not a one of these punks thought to stop to see maybe if their buddy was injured, maybe if their buddy was dead. Nope. All they did is run, like I say, like the cockroaches that they are. When we come back, speaking of schools, speaking of violence, Journal Sentinel, little bit, they've got their undies in a little bit of a bundle, because as part of this revenue sharing deal, police could be returning to MPS. I'll explain. We'll discuss. There we are. And as we've been telling you about for the last 2 weeks or so, if listening is not enough, if you want to see what we look like, we now have cameras up and the lights turned on in our Avenue studios. You can watch us live. The easiest way is really just to go to WTMJ.com, and there's a button that says Listen Live. And I know a number of people do. Or you can go to the Watch Live button and hit it and then see what goes on here. And I know a number of people do that. You can also simply go to YouTube, not YouTube TV, but just YouTube. It's free. Put in WTMJ and you'll see the live streaming of all the different programs. Plus, I think they put the programs up so people can go back and watch them should you choose to do it. It is just another opportunity and another way that you can partake in the conversations that we have and the information we present here on WTMJ. All right. So the big news this week is, of course, the shared revenue proposal. For years, people, particularly in Milwaukee County and the city of, and I'm just going to use Milwaukee collectively, have been complaining that they don't get enough money sent to them from the state. The state takes, what is it, a 5% sales tax, And then the state takes the money. So everybody that lives in Milwaukee County, for example, you pay the state sales tax and things like that. And then what happens is a portion of that money comes back to different counties. Milwaukee has been complaining for years that they do not have enough money, that they want more money back from shared revenue. Other communities, not all, but many others, are making the same point. So what's happened is the Republicans who control the legislature have said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We are willing to adjust the formula, and we will send, you know, an extra, I believe, 10% back to the different communities. So we're going to send more money back to the communities, and you can use that for, you know, helping with your pension costs, doing all sorts of stuff. But there are some conditions that are applied. First of all, in the city of Milwaukee, you have to agree to, in exchange for getting this money, you have to agree to a minimum number of police officers, with the understanding that that number is going to increase over time. So that's one of the requirements. There's others as well, including, okay, this additional money that we're going to send back can't be used to expand the HOP. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit later on in the program. But there are some strings that are attached to it, and that's the only way you're ever going to get any shared revenue that's going to be passed. Because there's all sorts of legislators from all around the state who believe that the way Milwaukee spends money is a way that would be an insult to the way drunken sailors spend money. And they point to all sorts of examples of frivolous spending. And, I mean, we don't have enough time on the program to start listing these things off. 1. Whatever million for the Office of Violence Prevention that does nothing to prevent violence. All it does is send some of the people that work there to various conferences across the country, and it accomplishes nothing. But that's one of the examples that are there. So, as part of this money coming back, there are strings that are attached to it. And my understanding is these are strings that I think, you know, most people in Milwaukee, the county and the city, they might necessarily they just rather just give us all the money and let us spend it, but it's strings that they can probably live with. Now, it's interesting because as we get into some of these details, there are some people that are just absolutely outraged that you would attach any strings, much less certain of the strings. So here's the deal, and this is the way it is breathlessly reported in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. State lawmakers could force Milwaukee public schools to have at least 25 Milwaukee police officers stationed in its buildings under a provision tucked into a sweeping bill that could increase funding for local governments. The district had cut its last contracts with Milwaukee police in the summer of 2020 as racial justice protests landed outside MPS offices. School board members have stood by that decision, but lawmakers could go over their heads. Now, let me just take a minute here and move back. It is true that MPS, in a nod to political correctness, made a decision that it was going to no longer contract with MPS to have school resource officers or have officers that were going to patrol the areas outside the schools. That has not removed police officers from the schools because, as we've talked about repeatedly, there are schools where you've got the cops that are there almost every day, if not every other day, because they're answering problems with fights or with shootings or with assaults or with whatever. So the idea that we're not having a school resource officer, that's going to stop the cops from having to show up, that's just not how it's worked out. Matter of fact, I would argue that the cops are there almost as much as when they ended up having, you know, the contracts to put them in. But anyhow, that this shared revenue deal would require that Milwaukee Public Schools have at least 25 school resource officers by January of next year. The officers would need to be present at schools during the school day and additionally available for other events at schools outside of normal hours as needed. School police officers are, of course, regular police officers assigned to work full-time at the schools. MPS would be the only school district that would face this requirement under the bill. Well, okay, we know why that is, because MPS has a lot more police calls than any other school district in the state. Under the bill, MPS could also be required to help pay for the officers, depending on what's agreed on between MPS and city officials. The bill also requires MPS and other schools to collect data about incidents of disorderly conduct and crimes on school property and school buses, and then they would have to consider those statistics in determining where you put the cops. But in essence, the legislature is saying to the school board, the politically correct and the politically motivated decision to remove school resource officers from schools has been a really, really bad idea. Some might say a debacle. And they're saying, okay, this is one of the strings. The resource officers have to come back. You want more money? Fine. But one of the strings is the cops are back in the schools. Our number, 855-616-1620, that is the Old National Bank talk and text line. I believe it was an incredibly stupid, politically correct, motivated decision to remove police in the first place. It is a decision which I think has been proven to be a disaster. And the sooner you get cops back in, the better. And I understand that this might upset, you know, some of the, I don't know, social justice advocates out there who just think, well, why do we have police in schools? To which my comment would be, the police have never left the schools. It's just that they're not there full time. They're back on an as-needed basis, which seems in some schools like it's almost every day or every other day. All right, is it unreasonable to expect MPS to have to rehire school resource officers? And is that a cause for outrage? You're taking away local control. Well, yeah, you're taking away local control because the people who control things locally have screwed it up so badly. 855-616-1620, we discuss. 855-616-1620. Jeff, in Wauwatosa, there are two school board members, name the names, Jenny Hoag and Jessica Willis, who are adamantly against school resource officers. But they conceded this spring with a new operating memo for resource officers, but they demanded that the officers wear soft uniforms, not full patrol uniforms, because they think real full police uniforms will trigger students and create an unfriendly learning environment. Shaking my head. What the actual heck are we setting our youth up for in the future? Well, that's the case. And, of course, in the failing Milwaukee public school system, the majority of the school board members, they don't want to bring cops back into the schools. Now, like I say, cops are already back in the schools on a regular basis because when all the problems develop, the cops then have to be called and they have to end up responding. One of the new school board members said she didn't think MPS should bring back police in the school or be forced to do so by lawmakers. You know, other candidates are saying, no, they don't want to bring police back in the schools. Who doesn't want to do that? I mean, you want to talk about seriously how far through the looking glass we've gone. There are a number of anti-police advocates that are in the city who view the police as an occupying force, et cetera, who've decided as part of the defund the police movement or the we hate the cops movement, we'll keep them out of schools. That'll do some good. It's an abject and total failure. It has not done anything to make the schools safer. It is a ridiculous position, and yet this is the position that is out there, and it's embraced by the very liberal elements of the city of Milwaukee. Well, if you didn't have a crime problem in the schools, if you didn't have violence in the schools, well, then I could understand maybe you don't want school resource officers. But there's nobody that can seriously argue that there's not a heck of a crime problem and a heck of a violence problem at MPS. And until you get that solved, don't the kids that go there deserve the best protection possible? And doesn't that come from having school resource officers in the schools so they can respond quickly when the inevitable fights and assaults occur? So there is a trial going on in New York. And you probably read about this involving Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump has already said he is not going to testify in this trial. He's being accused of sexual assault. And it's not a criminal trial. It's a trial where they're seeking monetary damages. This is a civil case. So the sexual assault, and also there's a defamation claim that's thrown in that we'll get into in a minute. But here's essentially the story. There's a woman named E. Jane Carroll, and back in the 1990s, she wrote a column. She was an advice columnist for a fashion magazine called Elle that you might be familiar with. And she said that she, because it was based in New York City, Donald Trump was this, you know, big shot in New York City. So they knew each other in a peripheral sort of sense. Her story is that she bumped into Trump at Bergdorf Goodman, which is a big fancy department store. You know, it's like Macy's or Saks or whatever. She bumped into Trump at Bergdorf Goodman, which is a big department store. She said the encounter began cheerfully, two public figures recognizing each other and chatting playfully as they moved through the store. What she says happened then is he says, look, I'm looking to buy some lingerie or something for girlfriend or whatever. So he says, will you help me with this? And he says that he like motions her over, and then ultimately the two of them end up in a dressing room. At that point in time, she says Trump pushed her against a wall and then began to physically assault her in ways that I don't necessarily need to describe. She says she kneed him and escaped the room, but then she says, so I got out. She did not go public with this. She never reported this to the police and said that I was sexually assaulted by Donald Trump in this dressing room. She apparently called one or two of her friends afterwards and said this is what happened, but they advised her we should go public with this. She never did. This story came out when he was, I believe it was during the third year of his presidency. She publicly accused him in 2019 of doing this, and at the same time she was coming out with this, she was also trying to sell a book. So that's kind of the background on this. She testified for 3 days. She acknowledges that she didn't go to the police. She acknowledges that she didn't scream or anything like that. She also acknowledges that she doesn't know when this happened. Her testimony is that this occurred in the mid-1990s. So she can't say this was August 20th of 1994, I was sexually assaulted in this dressing room. I mean, so she can't even say, okay, it was the third week in August of 1994. She's beyond, it happened in the mid-1990s. She's really not able to come up with any sorts of specifics on it. She says the reason I didn't go public, the reason I didn't scream is because, well, that's just, you just never know how you're going to react unless you've had something like this happen. I chose not to scream. She said that I didn't want to go public with this because he was a very, very powerful man. And so I made the decision to just keep it to myself. Normally, the statute of limitations, and the statute of limitations says that for almost every act, or whether it's a crime or whether it's a civil cause of action, there is a time limit that you have to bring an action for. The one exception to that is murder. There's no statute of limitations on murder. But the general theory behind the statute of limitations is after a certain period of time, it's just not fair to the accused to make them have to defend their conduct. So, I mean, for example, if I said to, okay, high school. I went to high school a long time ago. I went to high school in the 1970s. If I were to come out today and say I want to file a lawsuit because I allege that I was sexually assaulted by, one of my teachers in high school, and I haven't told anybody about this, et cetera, but I want money. The argument would be it's not fair to that person who's accused to go back and say, okay, what were you doing in September of 1976? It's just too far removed. Witnesses have died. So that's the whole purpose behind the statute of limitations. In this particular case, what they did in New York is they created this, kind of in the aftermath of the Me Too movement, they created this window of opportunity where people could bring old claims. And so that's why this gets in under the statute of limitations. But it doesn't change the fact that she doesn't know when it happened. So it's not like Donald Trump could go into the courtroom and say, okay, she says that I assaulted her on August 20th, 1994 in this dressing room. Here is my calendar for that week. And we've been able to recreate this. And it turns out that I was, on a business trip to Miami. And these are the hotel receipts from where I stayed. And even, 30 years later, it would be tough to kind of recreate that. But you could at least try. In this case, there is this vagueness about this, which makes it almost impossible to pin down a particular date or time frame when this could have happened. So it would be, I mean, Trump, for his point, he's not testifying, but he's issued a denial. This just flat out didn't happen. That's what he says publicly. Now, he hasn't testified under oath. But because there's no specificity here, it would be almost impossible for him to say, well, okay, I wasn't. She says it happened in the summer of 1994. Well, the summer of 1994, I was out of the country for X amount of times. Well, maybe it was 1995. So because of the vagueness, it becomes very, very difficult to make this anything other than a he said, she said. In addition, in an effort to bolster what, you know, her claims are, yesterday another woman testified, and this woman testified that she was sitting next to Donald Trump on a plane in the 71, early 1970s. And her story is that her testimony was that she's sitting next to him on a plane, and all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, he starts like grabbing her and, you know, groping her. And she gets up and, you know, heads back down to, she just leaves. I'm not going to put up with any of this, and just moves to, you know, a different part of the plane. She too, you know, never came forward with these claims until Trump was running for president in 2016. And in this case, it's something that she says happened in like the 1970s. But it's being introduced to trial to indicate that Trump is the kind of person, it's what we call other acts. It's the kind of person that this is something that would not be out of character for him to do. So that's kind of a background on where this goes. She, that is, the woman who's making the claim, is very adamant. I mean, she was cross-examined for 3 days, and her story is her story. She said, this is what happened. And yes, you're right. I didn't go to the police. And yes, you're right. I didn't scream. And yes, you're right. I told a couple people, but I essentially kept this to myself for all these years. So with that background, where does this go? And what is your reaction to this case? 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. And again, this isn't a criminal case. This is, and the defamation case, there's sexual assault, and also she's suing for defamation because after she went public with these claims, he said she's a liar. And now she's suing him for calling her a liar by saying that she's lying about these claims. So that's where the defamation claim comes in. But okay, with that background, let's open up the phone lines. 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. What is your reaction to this lawsuit? Does it seem like Trump is getting a raw deal? Do you have any doubt that this woman might be telling the truth? What about allegations from decades ago that lack specificity as to time, etc., etc.? Does that, even if you think Trump did it, is that something that gives you pause about whether you're going to find him liable or not? 855-616-1620. What do you think? We discuss in just a moment. And for people, again, wondering, what about the statute of limitations? Normally, in New York, the statute of limitations for a claim like this would be 5 years. You would have 5 years after the assault occurred to bring the action. Now, the lady in this case, E. Jean Carroll, is unclear even what year the assault occurred. But, you know, she says mid-1990s. So that means by normal circumstances, this case would have been barred by the statute of limitations because it's being brought 20 plus years after the statute would have blown. What happened is in New York in 2022, the state passed what they call an Adult Survivors Act, which opens a one-year window from November of 2022 to November of 2023 for people to sue their alleged assailants even if the statute of limitations had expired. So that's why this case is in court, but it doesn't change the fact that these are allegations from decades ago. And again, with no specificity as to when it occurred. 855-616-1620. Let's start with Connie in Portage. Connie, what do you think of all this? Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I think he'll probably get away with it again, but I have no doubt that he's guilty. we saw right on television. He showed his character when he got off of the bus that day, and he stood there and he said, you know, I can grab a woman by her crotch, and I can do anything to her, and she'll come right back to me. So why does it seem so impossible that he wouldn't be guilty of everything else?
Well, I don't think it seems impossible. Matter of fact, I think it seems completely in character. I think a lot of people would say that.
Yeah.
I guess the question, though, becomes, given the fact that she waited so long,
She's got witnesses.
She doesn't have any witnesses. She has a couple people that she told afterwards.
Yeah.
Do you know
maybe
she has?
Maybe they can come up with a date.
Well, so far nobody has the date. I mean, I guess if this wasn't Donald Trump, if this was somebody else, and instead of Donald Trump, it was just Joe Schmo, and somebody from his past comes up and says, hey, 25 years ago or so, I can't tell exactly, but he grabbed me. Would you think it would be fair if this wasn't Trump?
I think it would be definitely fair. I think that's a horrible act. And I think when women get abused like that, I think they definitely, the men should be punished for it. I don't care how long it takes.
What if he didn't do it? Or what if the man did? Let's put it away from Trump. What if it's somebody who didn't do it, who says, look, this is just flat out not true, and how do I defend myself from something that somebody's accusing me of doing from 25 or 30 years ago?
Well, I'm not a judge. I couldn't help you there.
Okay, well, thanks. No, I guess that look, if you're asking me, does something like this seem completely in character with, I mean, it's a little bit weird as to, you know, all the different circumstances and, you know, they go into the dressing room together. It's kind of a weird thing. But if you're asking me, do I think it's in character? Could I believe that Donald Trump did something like this? Absolutely. Of course I could believe it. At the same time, though, you sit there and you try, okay, take this out of out of the perspective of Donald Trump. Say, okay, ladies outside, this is your husband. You've been married to your husband for 15 years. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you're getting he gets served with these papers by somebody who it's 25 or 30 years ago and says, hey, he grabbed me in this dressing room. It's again, take out Donald Trump out of it. And your husband says, it doesn't happen, but I don't even know how to defend myself other than to say it didn't happen because there's no specificity. It's not like somebody says this happened in this dressing room on August 20th of 1995 and I can go back and I can at least try to recreate records. It's just the ultimate he said, she said. I guess that's the part of this I wrestle with. Can I believe it is in character for Donald Trump to do something like this? Well, of course. Let's talk to Laura in Calumet County. Laura, good afternoon.
Hi, Jeff.
What do you think?
It's complicated, but I recently just got done with a deposition myself as the victim. And there's a lot of grilling, and I hear the questions you're asking as a lawyer, and it's a little triggering. As a trauma victim, it's very hard to remember the details. And I had to do my own forensic, like figuring out when things happened, going back through pictures and dates and times, because you don't write it down, you don't remember, you don't want to remember it, you just want to move on. Especially then, when she just would have been, you know, crucified in the newspapers. I think she absolutely has a right. And yes, it's Donald Trump, so people are fired up on both sides. He has a predilection towards disrespecting and hurting other people and women especially. So I think that goes against him. If he had excellent conduct and nothing was questionable, then I think she'd have a hard time convincing the judge. But we tend to be very hard on women accusers. I've experienced this personally, and I've seen it where if we like the man who's getting accused or we personally haven't seen something bad in him, automatically that woman is a liar and a cheat. And then she gets re-victimized, and it's really, really damaging.
Okay, well, Laura, thanks for the call and thanks for sharing. And I'm just going to pass on asking a couple more follow-up questions because I'm sure, look, I understand the trauma that comes along with assault situations and things like that. I mean, in another life, you know, I prosecuted sexual assault cases and things like that. So I'm not insensitive to this. At the same time, there are, and look, and I understand a degree of vagueness. Well, I can't remember the exact day that this, in this case, it was just a one-off sort of thing. I can't remember the exact day that it happened, but you would think that you could, I mean, if especially if it was a traumatic enough situation, it seems to me that you would remember the year it occurred, or you would remember the time of year that it would occur, or like the friends that she told about this would remember, you know, when, at least a ballpark of when this happened. Do I think because of his character he could have done something like this? Well, yeah. But should that mean he's found liable? Don't know. Sheila in Milwaukee. Sheila, you're on WTMJ.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I was a victim of a carjacking, not a rape situation, but he did grab onto my blouse and tear it off. And so I was very traumatized by it. And because of it, I remember the exact date, time, the stoplight I was at, the intersection, what I saw. And maybe I'm just different, but I can't get that out of my brain forever. I remember the day and the time.
Yeah,
and it's been years. So I just... For me, if it's that traumatic to you, I'm thinking that you're going to remember, you're going to have far more memory of it. So you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. I just totally agree that when something traumatic like that happens, just like when, where were you when John Lennon was shot kind of thing, you know, I mean, don't forget things when they affect your life.
Well, or at least, and again, I understand there's this.
And I'm the last one that wants to call these women a liar. I'm the last one that wants to say that. But at the same time, if it was that traumatic, don't wait till he becomes the president. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, this is all just a game, I think. And I feel it's just disgusting because there are so many victims out there that are afraid to come forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wrestle with this, and I don't know how this whole thing is going to turn out. And I wanted to have this conversation. I really do appreciate some of the phone calls we got, and I understand this is a very, very traumatic thing, and it's a very difficult thing. And see, and I understand the part of her testimony when they're saying, "Well, why didn't you scream?" Well, I get that people are going to handle that in a different sort of fashion. I admit I have trouble with the "I can't pin this down." I wish I could tell you it happened in 1995. I guess. The passage of time, and it's one of the reasons why we have statutes of limitations, because there's a time period when people need to come forward in order to make sure that, you know, everybody's going to get a fair trial. Now, we changed that with kids and kids' sexual abuse and all. Don't know how this is going to play out, and I'm not prepared to say she's a liar. I'm not at all. And given, you know, what we know about Donald Trump, does something like this seem to be something that would be completely and totally believable that he would do? Absolutely. Now, you don't know, again, you don't know what her interactions were and things like that. We would have had a better opportunity to ferret that out if this claim had been brought 20 or 25 years ago, and you could have had witnesses that could have come forward instead of just being the, you know, the he said, she said sort of situation. So I don't know how it's going to turn out, but it's more complicated, I think, than maybe it's being made to present it, at least in some of the news coverage.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back to the program. The breaking news, and we told you about this at the beginning of the program, the Federal Reserve has once again decided to raise interest rates. They've bumped them. This is the 10th consecutive interest rate increase over the course of the last year or so. The federal funds rate has been moved to a range of between 5% and 5.25%. That is a 16-year high. So they bumped it, again, a quarter point. But what they're trying to do is they are trying to control inflation. And the idea is if you make it more expensive for people to borrow things, and that's what this does, you increase interest rates. The idea is, well, if it becomes more expensive for people to borrow money, maybe they'll stop buying things. And if they stop buying things, if you go back to the whole concept of supply and demand, maybe then prices will go down. because right now prices keep going up and people keep paying more and more for them. And so the idea is if it becomes more and more expensive to get money, maybe this will slow it down. So it, I'm not sure it's been working, but that's what they continue to do. Now, the one good piece of news here is that the Feds, they're at least sending signals that they're done raising interest rates for the foreseeable future. Now, they haven't committed to that, but they're at least sending signals because, again, the problem is you don't want to crash the economy. You want to slow down inflation, but you don't want to make it so that nobody's buying anything at all, and so that then, you know, people end up losing their jobs and things like that. So it's kind of a tricky balance. But as predicted, the Federal Reserve did raise interest rates by a quarter of a point. Now, that's the rate that they charge banks to borrow money. Then the banks, of course, I mean, they're not giving it to you at that interest rate. The banks then tack on their own interest rates and things like that. But it's an interest rate increase that is not good news, I think, for most borrowers. But the fact that they might at least be temporarily done is good news. Wall Street, Dow Jones is essentially, it's flat. But that's after a big loss yesterday. NASDAQ, which is tech heavy, is up about 0.47%. So the news was kind of expected. It was kind of, I think, baked into the stock market. But that's what's going on in the economy. But if you're in the market for a car or a loan for home improvement or a loan to buy a house or something, and you're hoping that there's going to be at least a decrease in interest rates anytime soon, doesn't look like that's going to happen. So that's just the new announcement that's out there. Okay. Those wacky socialists are back at it again. Yesterday, we talked about the Wisconsin Socialist Caucus, which is essentially two state representatives from Milwaukee who are proud Democratic socialists. And they came out in opposition to the shared revenue plan, in part because it commits too many people, too much money to police. The attitude of those darn socialists is that we've just got too many cops that are on the street. The phrase they use is, we are drowning in police. Well, we're drowning in criminals. I don't think that there's too many people, for example, in any community in this state, but certainly there's not too many people in the city of Milwaukee, which would argue our big problem is there's too many cops on the street. But anyhow, that's how these wacky Democratic socialists see it. Well, they're back again today. Two Democratic socialists who are members of the Milwaukee County Board. One is Ryan Clancy, who's also double-dipping. He's also the state representative. And Supervisor Juan Miguel Martinez, he has joined with two conservatives on the county board. There's not too many of them. One is named Patty Logsdon, and the other is Steve Taylor. And they've put out a press release saying that they object to Milwaukee, and again, we're talking about the city and the county. I'm using it as kind of a collective term. They object to any requirement that is part of keeping the Brewers in Milwaukee and is part of making these improvements to American Family Field, which is owned by the Stadium District. They object to any requirement that the locality, in this case Milwaukee, should be required to contribute. Now, by way of background, Tony Evers came out and said, look, here's what I want to do. I want to take $290 million of this budget surplus. I want to give it to the Brewers to let them, you know, make these improvements. And the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin will fund it. What the Republicans have done is they've said, look, we want to keep the Brewers here. And we recognize that there's going to have to be a significant component of various public funding to do it. But just like we did with Fiserv Forum, it's not fair to expect the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin to foot the whole bill. So what they're looking at is at least some form, multi-tiered form of funding, where the state kicks in money, but also Milwaukee County kicks in money, and the city of Milwaukee kicks in money. And the argument is that the Brewers and baseball in general, if you want to look at the benefits, and I think it's fair to say that they offer a benefit to the entire state. I firmly believe that. But at the same time, if we're dealing with reality, it's also unquestionably a larger benefit for the people that live in southeastern Wisconsin in general, and in particular that live by the stadium in either the city of or Milwaukee County. That's where the largest benefit is, because when people come to attend the games, they go to the different restaurants, they patronize the different bars, they stop off, they buy gas and things like that. So it's an overall benefit to the state, no question about it, but it is also a benefit to Milwaukee County in a way that Brown County doesn't get benefited, or La Crosse County doesn't get benefited, or Bayfield County doesn't get benefited. So the argument is, it's fair to expect, just like we did with Fiserv, it is fair to expect the city and the county to have skin in the game and put up money. And these two supervisors, actually four supervisors, two conservatives and the two of the socialists, are saying, no, we don't think that Milwaukee, county of, or the city, we don't think we should be required to contribute anything to American Family Field improvements. 855-616-1620, that's the old National Bank talk and text line. For this to get done, and I'm a baseball fan, I think the Brewers are a wonderful corporate asset. For this to get done, the reality is, I think all interested parties need to have some skin in the game. And candidly, I don't think it is unreasonable to say, all right, the state benefits from this, but you know what? There's a disproportionate benefit to Milwaukee. So what we expect is, we expect Milwaukee to contribute. Maybe not as much as the state contributes, but I think the model they used for Fiserv Forum is not an unreasonable model. So let's tee this up. Is it unreasonable to expect southeastern Wisconsin in general, but particular Milwaukee County, to contribute if we are going to make an investment of $250 or $300 million or however much dollars it takes? Is it reasonable to expect local governments to contribute to that? 855-616-1620. We discuss in a moment. 855-616-1620, which is the old National Bank talk and text line. So a couple Milwaukee County supervisors, two on the far left and two on the right, have come out and they've said, we don't think that the county or the city, we don't think local government should be required to contribute anything to the improvements that need to be made at American Family Field over the next 10 or 15 years in order to keep the Brewers. We think it should be exclusively from the state. All right, well, I think that's going to be kind of a non-starter. Here's one of our texters says, I don't think local governments should. I live around here, but I don't go to Brewer games, so why should I have to pay to help repair it? All right, well, if you live in Milwaukee County and you feel that way, okay, can you imagine then from a political perspective, you live here, you could go to Brewers games easily if you chose, but you choose not to, so you don't want to pay. Well, how do you convince, I don't know, somebody up in Minocqua, or somebody in La Crosse, or somebody in Wausau, or somebody in Marinette who doesn't live around here, and maybe you'll go to a Brewers game a year, but maybe they'll go to a Brewers game every few years, or because they don't want to make a 2 or 3 hour drive, they don't go to any Brewers games. Well, if you, who live in Milwaukee County, for example, don't want to pay for it because you don't go to the games, well, imagine the feeling of the state representative who's being asked to vote on this from Minocqua, because their constituents are going to say, we get nothing from this. I mean, maybe there's some tangential benefits from, having the Brewers in Milwaukee and stuff, but if people in Milwaukee don't want to contribute, why in the world should we contribute? And as we always talk about on this program, politics is the art of the possible. And, if you're trying to get state representatives, state senators from all over the state to sign off on this, many of whom have constituents who don't think that there's any significant benefit that they get in La Crosse or in Wausau or in Bayfield or wherever from having the Brewers here. Well, I mean, and I disagree, because I think there is a benefit, but there's also no question that the greater benefit is for people who live around here, particularly in Milwaukee County. So if you don't want to pay for it, well, then and you live in Milwaukee County, there's no way in the world that you can argue that somebody in Minocqua, I think, should have to pay for it. So I mean, that's the issue that you have here. And that's why I think everybody's going to have some degree of skin in the game. Jeff, I think it's reasonable for Southeastern Wisconsin or Milwaukee to pay. I expect this because you need to spend money to make money. We have a small ticket package. We drive 90 minutes twice a month to go to a game. We patronize multiple businesses while we are there. You know, go Brewers. And I think that's, I mean, I think that's the reasonable approach to this, to recognize that everybody needs to have an investment. Now, I don't know how you structure it. I don't know. They got very creative when it came to Fiserv. But to me, that's the model. Now, the other issue that people are facing, and here's expressed in one of our texts, it's crazy for guys making $30 an hour to have to subsidize billionaire owners by having their tax dollars go to their operating costs. All I would say to that is, first of all, I think, for example, having Major League Baseball or having the Bucks in Southeastern Wisconsin, I think that is an asset. You know, when the Bucks go on long playoff runs, it brings a ton of business into the area, and people spend money and they pay taxes and all sorts of things. And the same, I think, is true with the Brewers. But in addition, keep in mind that the Brewers don't own the stadium. The Brewers are tenants in the stadium. The stadium district, the public, owns the stadium. So I think it's reasonable to expect that if there are improvements that have to be made, those improvements are made by the owner of the building. I mean, it's kind of like if you're a landlord, for example, and you're renting a four family and it needs a new roof, I think, you know, you're not going to be going to the tenants who don't own the place. You're not going to be going to the tenants and saying, okay, I expect you to contribute to the new roof. Now, you might be going to the tenants and saying, okay, look, here's the deal. If I put on this new roof or I make some of these other improvements, you know, I'm going to want you to commit to staying longer. So I'm going to want you to sign a 3-year lease or something like that. I think that that's a fair deal. But again, the Brewers are tenants and there's a different deal. And one of our texters says, let the players pay for it. You know, they make millions. Okay, they're not going to do that. That's just not the reality of what's going to happen. So the question that we face as a practical matter is baseball important to keep in the state of Wisconsin? My argument is yes. I don't think there's any way you can look at the history of American Family Field, formerly Miller Park, and not say that, hey, we're a lot better off. The state is better off. Southeastern Wisconsin is better off. And Milwaukee County and the city of are much better off because we've had the Brewers here over the course of the last 25 years instead of having them move somewhere else. So, I mean, I think that some people might argue about that, but the truth is, I think that's what the reality is. And I think moving forward, that argument will continue to make a lot of sense. We're better off in that situation. But the question is, how do you end up paying for it? And I'm just here to tell you the politics of it, irrespective of what a couple county supervisors on either extreme of the political spectrum feel. If it's going to get done, it needs to get done by a cooperative effort with money coming from the state, money coming from the county, and money coming from the city. And so, you know, people need to get on board with that because that's just the flat out reality. Remember, a month or two ago, when you had the guy who runs Biden's Consumer Product Safety Commission and came out and he said, what we're going to do is we want to get rid of gas stoves. And we believe gas stoves are hazards and they're dangerous and everything is on the table, including, you know, banning gas stoves. And then there was this huge uproar that came from people who didn't want to have their gas stoves banned and things like that. And then immediately there was a backtrack. No, we didn't really mean that we were going to, like, ban them. We just meant that we were going to, like, take a look at this and figure out if there's ways that we can make them more energy efficient, things like that. Well, as I said at the time, don't believe that. Because the left in this country, that's what they want to do. We are, the policy, particularly under the Biden administration, is being driven by a bunch of what I'm going to describe as eco-terrorists who are out there, and they have decided that internal combustion engines, bad. Cars that drive on anything, operate on anything other than electricity, bad. Doesn't matter the fact that the technology is not there for all of us to replace our cars with, you know, electric vehicles. Doesn't matter if the technology is there, we'll do this anyways. Or the idea is people won't be able to afford cars, or they're becoming impractical, so then you have to use mass transit. Maybe that's the ultimate goal of this. So you've got that's going on, and so we've seen how that's played out. Internal combustion engines bad. We talked yesterday about these moves that are afoot in a number of states to ban gasoline-powered lawnmowers or gasoline-powered leaf blowers or gasoline-powered snow blowers because, again, we love the planet. Forget the fact that, you know, China and India are industrializing and they're building giant coal-fired power plants, and they could care less about pollutants. But, you know, we don't want you to be able to use your lawnmower. But, you know, the left says, oh, but we're not talking about bans. We're not really serious about this. Well, all right, here is the breaking news. Late yesterday, the New York State Legislature just signed off on their state budget. Tucked in the state budget is a provision that will prohibit natural gas hookups and other fossil fuels in most new homes and other constructions. The law effectively requires all electric heating and cooking in new buildings shorter than 7 stories by 2026 and by 2029 for taller buildings. So if you want to build a house, you are not going to be able to use a natural gas, forced air furnace to heat it. If you want to put in a fireplace, like a natural gas fireplace, you are not going to be allowed to do it. If you want to put in a hookup so that you could install a gas stove, you're not going to be able to do it. And it's pretty much across the board. City and counties have no license to override the ban. So the bottom line is, you know, you're not going to be able to have a natural gas furnace. Now, think about upstate New York. Think about Buffalo, all right? And, you know, if we got bad winters here, you know, you got really bad winters in Buffalo. So upstate New York, you want to buy a house and you want to build a house, or what's going to happen is no forced air natural gas furnaces. So it's all got to be electric. Where the electricity is going to come from, nobody has any sort of good ideas. The fact that electricity is going to be a lot more costly than natural gas, well, nobody ends up caring about that. The fact that people like their natural gas fireplaces and they like their fire pits doesn't matter. You cannot have them. This is big government telling you, no, you do not need this. Our number, 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. I'm sorry, this is another one of those situations, and you can watch us on our live streaming, you know, through YouTube or whatever, where you want to back off from your computer screen because my head is getting ready to explode. Natural gas is clean. Natural gas is plentiful. Natural gas is cheap. Natural gas is efficient. Forced air furnaces are a wonderful way to heat people's homes. People like natural gas fireplaces. We do not have the capacity to go all electric, just like we don't have the capacity to go to all electric cars. Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the Old National Bank talk and text line. All right. Should government, and I told you this was going to happen. You know, this is the goal of the Biden administration. This is the goal of states like New York and California. They want to force us away from our natural gas furnaces, despite the fact that they work. They want to force us away from our gas stoves, despite the fact that you might have that as a preference. And they want to force us to more expensive alternatives that they really... You know, again, I don't know where the electricity is going to come from if all of a sudden all the new construction has to be electric. Where is that going to come from? 855-616-1620. Are you ready to give up your natural gas powered furnaces? And do you think it's a good idea for the government to force you out of it? And if you don't think that Tony Evers in his heart of hearts would love to do something like this if he thought he could get away with it, you're kidding yourself. They want to do this in California. They've just done it in New York, and they're going to be doing it other places as well. Are you ready to have government force us away from natural gas furnaces and natural gas stoves and things of the like they did yesterday in New York? 855-616-1620. We discuss. 855-616-1620. That's the Old National Bank talk and text line. Remember a month or two ago when there was this push, we're going to ban gas stoves. And then the federal government backed away. Oh, no, we don't want to do that. And I was saying, don't believe this. This is really what they want to do. Now, this isn't the federal government, but this is New York State. Yesterday, New York State, the government has now banned natural gas in all new construction homes. Doesn't mean that they're going to pull out your gas furnace, but if you want to build a new home, it cannot be powered by natural gas. It has to be electric. Now, where the electricity is going to come from moving forward, I do not understand. Natural gas, which is, of course, it's clean, it's cheap, it is efficient, and it's plentiful. You know, but no, we've decided natural gas is bad, so we're going to go to all electric. You know, one of our texters says, say hello to rolling blackouts. Can you imagine what is going to happen, you know, during the summer when there's peak demands? I mean, it's difficult enough when you've got peak demands on air conditioning or whatever that now you're not going to be able to use natural gas at all as a backup. I mean, seriously, 855-616-1620. It is the future. And it is what, again, some of the climate activists are pushing for without any regard for whether or not this is going to work, whether it makes any sense at all. Jeff, I started writing a long and lengthy response to this conversation, but my blood pressure was starting to boil. I deleted it. I will simply say, New Yorkers, good luck. Yeah, that's going to be wonderful when, you know, 5 years from now, when you have some of the new housing developments in Schenectady, you know, New York, and all of a sudden it's winter, it's 10 degrees below zero, you're trying to heat your home, and you're doing it on electric, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a huge demand, and they have that rolling blackout, and it's 5 or 10 degrees below zero. Good luck with all that. Tim in Campbellsport. Tim, you're on WTMJ.
Hey, Jeff, love your show.
Thank you.
Great topic. Hey, so I have a landscape company, and we have three job trailers, and we have solar panels on top of them. And I have a hard time charging, you know, an 18-volt battery between jobs to be able to lawn trim or anything like that. I don't see how anybody can force you to do your whole job running batteries. It's not going to happen.
Well, right, you can't.
I mean, there's no way.
Yeah, you can't live on electricity alone. And again, you know, Tim, I'm a free market guy. If you're building a house and you decide, all right, I want electric heat in there. I want to use baseboard heat for electricity. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But the idea that the government's going to tell you that you can't fire up your carrier furnace, give me a break.
Right. You're absolutely right. And I talked to your screener also about this. I live in Campbellsport, and I can see probably 300 windmills. From where I live, I'm up on a hill, kind of. So there's wind farms all over the place, right?
Right.
My electricity has not gone down 1 cent.
Yeah.
So what are we really doing here? I mean, we put all these windmills up. They're kind of an eyesore. Farmers get tax breaks. I get it. But understandably, I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, I don't.
Right. No, exactly. Exactly. No. Right. No. Thanks for calling. Right. I mean, here. Okay. Now, I've got a caller that I think is going to say the opposite. But here's my text. Jeff, I had an electric water heater. I switched to natural gas. I save about 50% a month on cost. Electricity is incredibly expensive to use for heating. Now, I don't know because I have a gas water heater as well. I have a gas furnace. I think, you know, and I've upgraded them and they're efficient, and nobody likes to pay utility bills, but I mean, I don't think my bills are necessarily out of order, but it's a choice I made. There's no doubt in my mind that to heat a house, it is much cheaper to use, natural gas, the forced air furnace, than it would be if I had to put in baseboard heat. There's no question in my mind. But the bigger picture is, again, it's a choice that I think people should make. For the government to come in and say you're not going to have that choice anymore, that's just it's wrong. And the reasons we're doing it are just so darn stupid. This idea that, oh, well, we've got to save the planet. Well, okay, talk to me about the coal plants in India. Talk to me about the coal plants in China. But yet, you know, somebody in Schenectady is going to be freezing their butt off in the winter and having their utility bills go through the roof because now they're dependent on gas, electricity to heat instead of gas. And if they want to go with electricity, that's fine. But the government's saying you don't even have that choice anymore. Kevin in Waukesha. Kevin, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This is something in the end of January, I switched from electric range to a gas cooking stove.
Okay.
And I compared our bills last year to this year, and they went down $100 a month with the gas stove in the kitchen. And I know for a fact I used to have electric heat in one of my houses. And where do they think this energy is going to come from to produce all the electricity they're going to use?
Well, yeah, unless so we're going to go, are we going to do nuclear plants? Well, you can't have nuclear plants.
Well, exactly. And they're trying to get rid of the fossil fuels, you know, and with that being said, they're going to create much more, they're going to burn much more fossil fuels right now because they don't have enough of the solar grid. And not to mention, they want to save the planet. So what about all these patio heaters that is burning propane?
Right. Gone.
It's like
gone. No, thanks. Yeah. Look, here's the bottom line. And I don't know if it's cheaper to use electric, an electric stove is cheaper than a gas stove. I don't know. But I know people should have the choice. And I know we don't have the ways of making electricity. And I know that furnaces, gas-fired furnaces, are efficient. They're effective. They're inexpensive comparatively, and the government shouldn't be telling us we can't have one. See, what drives me crazy about these conversations is you have these people that are so divorced from the real world. And look, for example, electric cars. I know people who own electric cars. I know people who love their electric cars. But almost everybody that at least I know that drives an electric car also has a gasoline-powered car because the electric cars just aren't practical for a lot of stuff. You know, it's fine if you want to take a spin, you know, around Milwaukee or whatever or to run some errands or things like that. But for long trips, it's just not practical. That's just the reality. And because there's not enough charging stations, it takes way too long to charge these things because you never exactly know what your battery life is going to be. For example, you know, maybe you can drive to Minneapolis and back. Maybe you can get all the way to Minneapolis, you know, in the middle of summer. But when it's, you know, 10 degrees below zero and you're blasting the heat and things like that, it's different. But I mean, I understand there's a role for electric vehicles. But we are nowhere near close enough right now to essentially forcing people to give up their internal combustion engine cars and force them to go to electric. And yet that's what the Biden administration's doing because they're just, they've gone completely climate wacky and they've jumped into bed, figuratively speaking, with the environmental left who's decided that, well, we think this would be a good thing, so even though it's not practical, let's do it. This is the same sort of scenario. Well, we don't like natural gas. And it's an interesting war because natural gas is clean. I mean, you don't have people talking about, you know, that's one of the reasons why, you know, people switch to natural gas as opposed to, you know, the old oil heaters or things like that. Natural gas is clean. It's efficient. It is still plentiful. That's the truth. And it's cheap. Right. And so now you have the government's come in and we've decided, OK, well, the environmental left says electricity is the way to go. So let's get rid of natural gas, even though it's going to be a lot cheaper. It's going to be a lot more effective, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to get rid of that without any regard for where does the electricity come from? How are you going to produce this? You have rolling blackouts now. Look at what goes on in California. You know, you have, you know, on an almost weekly basis in the summer, they've got rolling blackouts of electricity. Well, okay, you make all the cars electric. You make all the heating for homes have to be electric. How are we going to, you've got a power grid that is ancient. How are you going to upgrade this? Now, again, maybe 20 years from now, 30 years from now, maybe 40 years from now, the technology will be there. No problem with that at all. But for the love of goodness, it's not ready to be done now. And you need some grown-ups in the room saying, this is wackadoodle. We're not ready for this. But unfortunately, there's nobody ready to tell the wackadoodles that their plan is wackadoodle.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, here's WTMJ's Jeff Wagner.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Welcome back. Hey, one of the real sins about our camera setup here is the fact that you only see us from like the waist up. So Sandy Max is wearing the shoes. The shoes you have on, they're like sparkly.
Sparkly.
Things. They're sparkly. Absolutely.
Well, full on sparkles.
Okay. Well, Wait. Okay. Well, no. I think the camera's there. You go. Okay. Well, okay. Yeah. Sandy Max.
He was frightened. I was going to kick him in the head.
Well, no. I was frightened that you were going to hurt yourself because if I tried to raise my leg like that, I would have been pulling all sorts of stuff right there. That would have been the YouTube viral moment. Here's Sandy going behind me on the camera to try to like show off her shoes, raise her leg, and boom, pull a hamstring.
About
or something.
An hour during Wisconsin's afternoon news, I'll make sure to take them off and like put them up by my head one gets injured, but people can see the sparkles.
Right. Right. No one gets injured. I was thinking, I mean, you don't understand. I had and this is one of the things that's come with age. So this morning we had a couple screws came out of one of the kitchen cabinets. And so I decide I'm going to be the handyman and fix it. So I go down the basement, I find replacement screws and stuff. And I did it. But the thing was to do this, I had to get like down on my knees. You know, I'm on a kind of like on my hands and knees, squatting on the kitchen floor.
Oh, yeah.
To like
you gotta put your back into
absolutely. But it wasn't a problem with that. It was a problem in getting up afterwards.
Sure,
you know,
get down, get funky. It's getting back up again.
Right.
So, will you make some of those sounds?
I make sounds. That's one of the things that happens with age too. You make these involuntary noises. It's just like, did that noise just kind of come out of me and stuff? It goes with it. But those are very, very stylish shoes. And hopefully, if somebody's watching us on the YouTube channel, they were able to see maybe that little thing. That
was, do a roundhouse kick, show everybody.
Yeah. There you go. Well, that's
well, I'm glad they gave you joy.
It gave me pleasure, right? It's the little things in life that do that. Speaking of that, you tried to buy a car lately? I want to just share this experience because it used to be, you know, back pre-COVID, that if you wanted to buy a car, you would go to a dealer's lot and, you know, you'd look around and you probably do some research so you have an idea of what kind of car you wanted. And then you'd go to a dealer's lot and there'd be, I don't know, tens of cars, maybe hundreds of cars that were on the lot. And you'd say, okay, I want this is kind of what I want. What kind of colors do you have here? And, you know, what are the features? You got one with a sunroof. You got one that doesn't have a sunroof. You know, all those different types of things. Now, I understand there's always been the chance of ordering them, but you used to be able to go and you'd have a number of different choices. So here's my deal. Hurricane Ian, we had a car that was temporarily stored in Florida and we lost the Hurricane Ian, the garage flooded, no other damage, but it took out the car. So I've been operating, we've been down a car. So last November, I made arrangements to buy a new car. And I didn't need a car right away. And the reasons for this, it doesn't matter. But here's what ended up happening. So I order a car November 2nd. Okay, November 2nd of 2022, and I'm looking forward to getting the car, but obviously I don't have it yet, but it's got all the bells and whistles. They're making it exactly like I want it, so that's fine, and it's a 2023, and they tell me, well, it should be here by late February, early March. Well, late February comes around, early March comes around, it's not here. Then I get a notice saying it's being manufactured April 3rd. Okay, well, that means, you know, maybe you'll have it by a couple of weeks, I don't know. And I've continued to get notices and notices saying, okay, it's going to be here. I am absolutely promised that the car will be here sometime between tomorrow and next Wednesday. But I was getting a little bit frustrated because, and it's not the fault of the dealer. I mean, it's just all this stuff coming together. I'm not angry about it. I'm just frustrated about it. So, in the anticipation and the chance that I wouldn't be able to get this car for a couple months. I was not going to continue to wait. So yesterday, Fran and I, we decided, I said, okay, look, let's go out and look at a couple dealers. I really want the car that I ordered 6 months ago, but if they're not going to be able to deliver it, let me see what plan B is, because I'm now at the point where I need a car. I need a car, whether it's the one I've ordered or something else. So I do my due diligence. I go on the internet to a couple dealers, for dealers that I patronized before. And I'm thinking, okay, well, if I don't get the car I ordered here, I'll look at, you know, some of these other cars that I know that I would like or that I've had in the past. So I go to one of these dealers and I see, okay, they say they've got like six or seven of these cars, a particular model, on the lot. Okay. So that's fine. So we drive over there because they had one. If it was a white one, I would be interested. And again, it's just kind of a backup plan that if it turns out they can't deliver the car, I can't get the car delivered I ordered, I'll cancel that order and buy something else. Won't be as happy with it, but that's fine. So anyway, I get to the dealership and nice young man, car salesman, and I say, well, okay, I see on the website that you've got seven or eight of these particular, whatever the model car is. He says, no. He says, we've got two on the lot, and we might be getting it. We're getting a third one in the next couple of days. So, well, the website's got this or that or the other. He says, no, we just, I don't know about that, but we don't have them. You know, we've got two that you could choose from and a third one coming. Okay. So then I drive to another dealership. This is what I'm doing yesterday afternoon. Again, I'd been on their website and it was like six or seven, same sort of story, six or seven of one type and four of another type of car that it might be acceptable. And I go in and I talk to the nice sales lady and she says, well, no, we don't have any of the first type of car that you were looking for. And we have one of the second type and it's right there. And yeah, you could buy it. You could drive that one off the lot, but there's literally no inventory at all out there, at least in, and I mean, I'm not talking about specialty cars. I'm not trying to buy Porsches or things like that. There's no inventory at all that's there. Or, you know, yes, to the extent there's inventory, it might be, well, we've got two of these cars and one is this really funky color that I understand why nobody's been buying. I understand why that one's sitting on the market. And yes, we have one other one. I'm not even getting into the point of like talking about costs and prices and things like that. I have no idea what, if any, discounts there would be. But I remember thinking all last night, you know, what's happening? I appreciate it. It's a kind of a first world problem that you're trying to buy a new car. But I'm in this situation where you go out and there is very little that's there. Now, I don't know what the used car market looks like, although I was talking to my brother. He just picked up a used car for my nephew. And, you know, he was saying even that was scarce. I want to open up the phone lines. Our numbers are 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. Have you been in the market for a car recently? And have you noticed like the same things? Like the old days where you would go I kind of thought we were past this when, you know, the pandemic sort of ended. And I understand, you know, there was the part shortage, you know, with COVID and you couldn't get chips and things like that. And I guess I had kind of thought that a lot of that was over, but at least based on my experience, and maybe it's just the dealerships I'm going to, but it certainly doesn't appear that this shortage is, for whatever reasons, is ended. And I mean, I'm wondering what the wave of the future is going to be. Is it going to be you're not going to do what you used to be able to do and go to a dealer and be able to look at your choice of, hey, this is the type of vehicle I want. And okay, here we've got 10 of these. Here you can test drive a couple. You can decide which features you want. I'm wondering if that's just gone and it's never coming back. Have you tried to buy a new car lately? 855-616-1620. Now again, in our case, I think it's going to work out because they guarantee me that my vehicle is going to finally arrive sometime in the next week, and I can live with that. They're going to help me with a rental car or a loaner for that couple period of time. So I'm thrilled with that. It's just, I was just stunned that there's not any choice anymore that's out there. 855-616-1620. We discuss in a moment. 855-616-1620. That's the old National Bank talk and text line. And by the way, there's no bad guys in my story. I mean, I'm not angry with the dealer that I bought the car from or the salesperson. The car hasn't been delivered from the factory, and it's, you know, as soon as they get it from the factory, they're going to get it to me. That, so it's not that, but it has been an interesting experience as I look at the Plan B. I'm figuring, well, okay, I look at the websites and they've got all these different other cars that are out there. So if I want to cancel this order, and I really don't, and now I'm not going to have to, but you know, I can go out. I don't know what people do. If you were in a situation where you wanted a new car, your car dies on Thursday and you absolutely need to have a car, I don't know where you get it. You go out to these dealers and they have no inventory. I mean, none or almost none. You know, your choices are, we got two cars and, you know, one is a color that's not found in nature. And, you know, you kind of, I don't know why anybody would make a car that in the color, but certainly I understand why people aren't buying it. 855-616-1620. Have you tried to buy a car lately? Ray in New Berlin. Hi, Ray. You're on WTMJ.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
I'm just going to refer to your guy there that I was looking for a car last year for my wife. And in August, we ordered can I mention the car name?
Sure.
It was a Corolla Cross. It's a new SUV that they have out, a small one.
Okay, Toyota. Okay.
Ordered it in August, first week of August. They said it'd be at Thanksgiving time. Well, that was gone and passed. Then they said Christmas. That's gone and passed. Then they said January. And no luck. And then he told me, he says, oh, by the way, your car is earmarked for a demo. I said, what do you mean demo? He said, well, we're going to keep your car for a month, and then you can have it after that. I said, goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. So what did you do?
Well,
you...
I work for a Honda dealer.
Okay.
And I ordered the car just January. And I just stopped today because I was in the area and to see any luck. And he says, no. He said, but maybe next month. And he said, the trouble is, I wanted the EXL because you drove a CRV, don't you?
Yep, no, I do. I have CRV. I remember.
Yeah, and I had a hybrid at 20, but I gave that to my daughter, and I wanted to order a new one. And the price is $5,000 difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not much in 2 years.
Yeah, no.
So I said, well, I'll take the HRV.
Yeah,
I'll take the HRV, and well, I can get it ordered if I take it without the mirror icons, you know, for the blind spot. They don't have any chips for that. Yeah. They said they'll knock $80 off. But I said, I want a complete car.
Yeah.
You know, if I wanted the car, I want it all. And he says, well, it's going to be a while. And I says, well, I waited this long, I'll wait there.
No,
right, now they're having trouble with it.
Yeah, no, Ray, thanks. And it is this problem. And look, and I understand that's I'm not indicting dealers because the dealers, their business is getting cars and selling them. Trust me, these salesmen, my salesman does not want, and this isn't a Honda book, but the salesman doesn't want to hear from me two or three times a week, or especially to hear from my wife going, where is this, you know, where is the car that we ordered last November? So I get it that this is going on, but it's just a real, the idea that, I mean, because I was kind of naively thinking, well, okay, if it's going to be another month or two before my cars that I've ordered is going to come in, I'll get a car that I don't like as much. But, I mean, to me, cars are transportation and stuff. But, I mean, it was just really kind of interesting to go to a couple dealers yesterday. And despite what it might say on the Internet, the inventory is just not there. Paul in Twin Lakes. Paul, you're on WTMJ.
I've been listening, Jeff, and you're hitting it right on. Thank God you are actually calling this out because I'm going through the same thing. I need a second car. I'm a carpenter. I work in Chicago. I live in Twin Lakes, so I'm running about 30,000 miles a year. So I put a lot of miles on my little cars. So you want something small, something basic, because it's going to get beat up. It'll be junk in, you know, 5-7 years. Well, I'm looking at a couple different small Chevys, a little Trailblazer, and then recently, because the Trailblazer has been delayed so much, now I'm looking at the basic Trailblazer. It's like $23,000. Something I could throw tools in, not really worry about it. I have a nice family van for my wife. But what I'm getting at is the timeline they gave me when I put a deposit on the Trailblazer that was supposed to be coming in, it's been a couple months now. So now I'm out there actually looking at the 24 Trax, which is a redesigned little mini SUV.
Yeah.
And those are supposed to be in by the end of the month. I have like four different dealers that I'm on call list with. on that vehicle because I didn't know that vehicle was coming out. They redesigned the Trax. The Trax is kind of like the bastard child of the Chevy. It's an ugly little car. But the new one is actually a pretty nice little vehicle. It looks like a smashed-down Blazer. But what I'm finding out is exactly what you are talking about. They list in transit. In transit can mean a week. It can mean a year.
Yeah.
So if you put a deposit down, and I was naive enough to put a deposit down a couple months ago on that Trailblazer.
Yeah.
It's refundable.
Yeah.
So I'm letting it ride. I'm letting it ride, and I'm shopping while I'm sitting and waiting. I'm not desperate for a vehicle.
Right.
But thank you for calling that out. Dealers are not keeping inventory. I think they're playing this game of in transit as a way of basically getting you to drop a deposit on it, and they don't have to sit on inventory. They're staying as lean as they possibly can.
Yeah, interesting. Now, thanks for calling, Paul. I mean, again, I was just kind of like surprised because again, when I went there, I expected that I would have my choice of a lot of vehicles. Now, if I wanted to write a check yesterday, I could have driven a car off the lot. So there were two or three that were there. I don't know what I would have had to pay for it, and it didn't get to that stage. It's interesting. Jeff, I ordered a new truck last April and was told the same thing about when it was being delivered. It never came. I ended up canceling the order that March, and we found something else, not what I wanted in features. Yeah. And there's all sorts of reasons, and there's all sorts of factors. And I'm actually not angry. It's interesting, Paul, you talk about the Chevy Trax. I've had a rental car for the last – one of the things that's prompting this is I had a rental car for a month. It's going back tomorrow. And so – I'm now at a stage where, okay, we need to figure out the second car. And hate is a strong word. I've always believed that you should never either love or hate anything that can't love or hate you back. That's just kind of one of my rules because it turns out to be a waste of spirit. So having said that, since you're not supposed to hate inanimate objects, I don't hate this car, but needless to say, this would not be my choice of cars. My wife's laughing because she can see me grumble every morning when I jump into this thing, and it's just not for me. So I hope the new models of this are great. I'm going to be happy to get this one back to the rental car place in the next day or so. It's just an interesting experience, and I guess I bring this up kind of like, you know, buyer be warned, because if you think you are going to be in the market for a new vehicle anytime soon, at least around here. And I'm getting some texts from people who live in Sheboygan or in some of our western suburbs, and they're saying they're seeing the other thing. They're seeing that dealers' lots are starting to fill up. And I hope that's the case. That's just all I'm saying. That was not my experience. And maybe southeastern Wisconsin, maybe that's more of a unique thing. And that's great. All I'm saying is if you think that you're going to be in the market for a new vehicle in the reasonably near future, and you think, oh, this is just going to be like the old days. I'm going to run to a dealer's lot on a Saturday morning. I'm going to find, you know, the car I like with all the different choices. I'm going to negotiate my best deal and drive off at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Maybe that happens, but I don't think that's the way of the world anymore. But for me, they guarantee me that my new vehicle, after 6 months, they guarantee me that it will be in sometime between tomorrow and next Wednesday. We'll see. Here's a text, Jeff. It's a take what you can get inventory now. The glory days of having 500 cars on a lot are over. I had to drive 6 hours into Michigan in December to get the truck that I wanted. And again, I'm getting emails from other people who are saying, well, you know, in some parts of the state, it's just different, and that there's a lot of cars that are out there. I'm just saying that wasn't my experience. And I guess all I'm saying, and that's the whole purpose of this, is if you think you're going to be in the market for a new car, I think the dynamics have changed, and if you think you're going to, like I say, be able to buy one that has everything you want, maybe you'll get lucky or whatever, but I think if you think that the old days of being able to find, hey, there's 15 different ones on the lot, this is the one I like, and I'm going to drive it off in 2 hours, I don't think those days are here anymore. Will they come back? Who knows? Let me see your shoes, Wyatt. You got funky shoes on? No, yours are kind of like normal shoes. We just had a wonderful YouTube moment, literally a YouTube moment, like at the top of the hour, because I was complimenting Sandy. She's got these like sparkly shoes. And I was going back and I was looking at the feed. This is one of the wonderful things with our camera. And she decided to show them to the audience, which involved coming here, standing behind me, and like kind of doing the splits, lifting her. I mean, I would have pulled so many different things.
Yeah, I used to be that flexible, but I'm not anymore, Jeff.
No, but I mean, Sandy was able to pull it off. I was very, very. I went back and I looked at it. Yes, it is on the live feed. If you watch us on live, or you go back and you watch the if you go back and watch the replay of this show, you'll see like me, and then all of a sudden there's this like foot right next to my head.
Yeah, my black Vans are not worth the pulled hamstring.
I was just impressed with the flexibility. I was like, wow. I was telling a story about how I was trying to do a minor home repair this morning, and it was I got down on the ground. Okay, I had to be on my knees to do the screw the thing in, but getting back up again, that was what the challenge was. And I think it gets worse as you get older. That's what I'm told.
Yeah, you get knocked down, you get back up again, though.
There you go. Okay, see, that is one of the things you get. It's the added enhancement if you choose to not just listen to us, but also take advantage of our new live stream. And you can do that by just hitting the watch live button at 620WTMJ.com, and they replay all this stuff on the YouTube channel. Who knew that WTMJ had a YouTube channel? When we come back, Back to the Future. I'll explain, we'll discuss. One of our texters, Jeff, you always need a getting up plan before you decide to drop down to the floor. Yeah, there is all that thing. Okay, I'm going to get down here. How exactly am I going to get up? Always one of the issues. Okay. A week or so ago, we had a relatively heated conversation about a number of school districts that do not allow children to have smartphones in the schools. And a number of you, you know, my perspective was you don't need smartphones in the classroom. And the biggest argument in favor of it is, well, there could be a school shooting. And if the case there's a school shooting that thankfully, you know, one in 10 million sort of chance, you know, the kid needs to be able to communicate with the outside world. And, you know, we'd be rather be safe than sorry and things like that. Now, you can argue with whether that's a valid concern or whatever. But I understand that is a concern. You know, the flip side of this, no pun intended, once we get to the topic here, the flip side of this is that smartphones in schools, they are huge distractions. You know, you've got the kids that are, instead of learning, they're on the internet and they're texting each other and they're playing around with all these different things. But the justification for having them is that emergency situation. It is the catastrophe. You might need to be able to communicate with the outside world. Well, a couple texters had made a suggestion. I don't think I read those particular texts, but I got to thinking about that when I saw a story in the Wall Street Journal today. The Generation Z. God bless Generation Z. It's like everything that's old is new again or back to the future. Generation Z. A lot of the people are snapping up something that many of us had a number of years ago. Flip phones. So here's the deal. here's the way the story starts. When so-and-so goes out, people constantly ask to see her phone. The 18-year-old often obliges, flipping it open and handing it over. In late 2022, lady and some of her dorm mates at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign were bemoaning their smartphone addictions. We were talking about how we felt like slaves to our phones, like robots who kept scrolling and scrolling even when we're out at parties. The group hatched a plan to do something about it. The next day they went flip phone shopping at Walmart. And then it talks about how, you know, she went out and, you know, ended up buying a flip phone that costs, you know, $90. That essentially it's a phone. You know, you can make phone calls on the flip phone. It's got some limited, you know, it's got an access to the internet. You can't, it doesn't support apps. There's apparently on a lot of these phones, what you can do is they are extremely, extremely basic. You can go and you can maybe a little bit of internet access, but no apps. You can't get on Instagram. You can't get on TikTok. You really can't surf the internet. Maybe you can check email, maybe, depending on this. But these things, they're dirt cheap. You know, if you might have to pay $1,400 for a smartphone, you can get one of these things for $90. The Flip Phone plan. You can buy a basic flip phone and a prepaid plan for under $100 at most big box stores. And it's not a smartphone. It's not a computer in your hand. But what a lot of these kids are saying is, look, this gives us our way to decompress. It's not like we've given up our smartphones. But a lot of times when we go out, for example, at night, and, you know, we're going to be hanging out with our friends, it helps us with the addiction because we've got the phone. So if we need to communicate with somebody in that sort of emergency situation or whatever, we've got the old-fashioned flip phone that does it. But at the same time, we don't have the mini computers in our hand that offer all these things. And believe it or not, this is a trend which is starting among younger people. And I was actually kind of thinking this is for the parents out there who think, again, it's important. Your kid absolutely has to be able to contact you in case there is that emergency situation, the school shooting or whatever. These flip phones are almost a ready-made answer to that. You know, does the kid need the $1,000 smartphone that's got, you know, the internet capabilities and you can download all the apps and do all this stuff? Or is something just basic communication all you really need? Our number is 855-616-1620. That is the old National Bank talk and text line. They're starting to see a resurgence among flip phones. And is this a reasonable alternative, especially, for example, for younger people, for the first cell phone? Maybe it's for really busy people who have that phone addiction and you don't want to go cold turkey, but at the same time, you're tired of being one of those people that you're sitting out at dinner with four of your friends and everybody's looking at their computer screens and everybody's got to check that. Is a flip phone an alternative to that? And does it make sense that flip phones are making a comeback? 855-616-1620. Look, as I'm frequently told when I talk about topics like this, for kids, you know, for their first phone, I don't understand why in God's green earth that somebody, you know, would need to go out and buy an iPhone, you know, 14 for their 10-year-old son or daughter. If you think it's important for them to be able to communicate in emergencies or whatever, hey, you pick up a $50 flip phone or whatever, you've got that all covered. 855-616-1620, we discuss in a moment. 855-616-1620. Yeah, that's Back to the Future. Here's an interesting text, Jeff. My very first phone was a flip phone, but now that I'm in high school, so we got the high schoolers texting, and I have a smartphone. I need it for certain typing things, and if I need to look up stuff to help me with research projects. Honestly, though, kids these days are way too addicted to their phones, so if kids have cell phones, they should have certain app restrictions or limits on them. Well, you know, and actually, for a lot of the Gen Zers, it's not like they're giving up their smartphones, but they're also getting a flip phone. And the idea is sometimes you just leave the smartphone at home because you don't need to be on the internet all the time. You know, when you're out with your friends, you're out socially and stuff. Now you might need the ability to make a phone call since we don't have pay phones anymore and you might need to call an Uber or whatever. But I understand where this is going. I also think that for everybody out there who thinks, well, I've got my 10-year-old and I've got to give them $1,000, you know, iPhone 14 because they might need to get in touch with me. Well, maybe the $90 flip phone is the answer to that. Dan in Fredonia. Dan, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
To me, it seems like an almost perfect solution to a pretty troubling trend and some troubling statistics we see with, you know, young kids with smartphones. I just wanted to mention a good friend I have that's devoted a lot of her time to, you know, spreading awareness to other parents about the risks smartphones can pose to, mm-hmm. to young teens with exposure to pornography, exposure to, you know, depressing messages. And it just seems to be a really good solution.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's a way. Now, look, I understand you're going to age out of that. I get it. But especially for these younger kids, you know, does your 11 or 12-year-old really need to be surfing the internet and visiting Lord knows what websites and on all these different, you know, apps and stuff like that? If the concern is, gee, I need her or him to be able to get in touch with me in case there's an emergency, okay, well, you got the flip phone. And it's got some limited internet capabilities, but you're not going to be able to do what you can do on a smartphone. Bill in Racine County. Bill, you're on WTMJ. Good afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Recently retired math teacher. Every school, virtually every school, I haven't seen one or heard of one yet, has the auto dial thing that if in fact there is an emergency, parents will be dialed and informed immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not really a need. And to go along with that, last year, three major fights in the building, and all of them were directly connected to, you already know the answer, yeah, don't you?
Right, the cell phones. The fight breaks out, and then everybody's on their cell phone telling their friends and relatives there's a fight. Then everybody comes in, and just all you know what breaks loose.
And the fight was a result of something somebody did or said on a cell phone.
Yeah,
that was the point. It instigated it in the first place.
Well, okay, but how do you deal? And by the way, I agree with you, Bill. But I was getting all sorts of blowback when I was talking about that aspect of it last week from these people saying, "Jeff, you don't have kids. You do not understand." In that case where there's the active shooter thing, we need to be able to get in touch immediately with our children. We want to find out exactly where they are. How do you deal with that parental blowback?
All I can say to that, sir, is that when I got home after school dealing with those situations, the messages on my phone, on my kitchen phone, had recorded messages from the school of which I worked that informed me this and that and that and this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was already there. The important thing is that parents need to rely on the school, rely on the principal, rely on the home office.
Good enough. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And again, I don't disagree with you. I don't want to get too far off. These stories about smartphones, about flip phones making a comeback. To me, this is that perfect middle road sort of thing. If you decide and the school says it's okay for kids to have smartphones, why would you give them a $1,400 iPhone or a $1,000, you know, iPhone 14? Get them the $90 flip phone. You get that security and you don't have all those other worries. Seems to me to make sense.